You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, James W. Russell, public policy affiliate scholar at Portland State University, author, The Labor Guide to Retirement Plans for Union Organizers and Employees. Also on the program today, Full House votes to hold Mark Meadows in criminal contempt. Derek Chauvin pleads guilty in federal court to civil rights violation charges over his George Floyd murder. Congress raises the debt ceiling, Biden to sign. And as we cross the 800,000 COVID death threshold, Omicron in at least 35 states as the CDC warns of a COVID tsunami. House passes an $8 trillion over 10-year defense bill. Actually gives Pentagon more than it asked for. Federal judge finally approves Treasury Department's release of Trump's tax records to the House Ways and Means Committee. Pfizer COVID pill reportedly effective against Omicron, but the question is, can they make enough? Trump's accountant testifies to a grand jury as the Manhattan DA digs deeper into his potential corporate fraud. And disgraced former Governor Andrew Cuomo apparently got authorization to write his book as a state employee under false pretenses. He is now ordered to return millions of dollars in profits he received from that book. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for joining us. This just breaking. NBC News is reporting that the Senate is now expected to shelve the Build Back Better bill, moving forward aggressively now on voting rights. There it is. Don't know quite what that means in terms of shelve. You know, I don't know if that means...
Or what that means about moving aggressively on voting rights.
Well, yes. Don't know what that means about shelf. Does that mean that they're going to try and vote on it in January? I don't understand what the Senate thinks that Joe Manchin is going to do any differently. In January. But there it is.
His biggest attempt at a legacy legislation, probably gone. I don't know that, frankly, that the Build Back Better bill at $1.75 trillion over 10 years is really much of a legacy anyways, frankly. But there it is. This coming on a day where the House and the Senate is set to approve. House passes. Senate is set to approve what is functionally an $8 trillion bill over 10 years. It could end up being a little bit more than that, frankly. $780 billion this year, 775 that passed the House. 770, about $25 billion more than the Pentagon asked for. That goes up on a regular basis. Even a 5% bump on that gets you over $800 billion for a year. I would be willing to bet 0.01% of that amount that we're going to pass a defense budget every year. That is at least that much money going forward. If anybody wants to challenge me on that, I'm open to it. I'm open to that bet. I can't show you the money that I have that money up front. You're just going to have to, maybe I'll put it in escrow with Matt or something. Got an email from listener Patrick. I was wondering if you guys could possibly cover the ongoing layoffs at Long Island University, Brooklyn. That is actually just down the street. You'll recall, I think this was back in 2017, there was a unionization drive or dispute. And LIU Brooklyn tried to lay off its entire staff. But there was pushback and backlash in the media. And as Patrick writes, it was harsh enough that they had to relent. Since then, they've cut a number of departments. And as of today, this was actually last week we got the email. The administration announced the closure of our art department. This has been planned for several months, but they held off announcing until the end of the semester, ostensibly to trick art students into paying another semester's worth of tuition. The university, whose president makes around $2 million annually, provided a number of faculty members with 2 weeks' notice to clear their rooms. And this is from the school's newspaper, quote, senior professor Cynthia Dantzik, who has worked at LIU for over 50 years, was among the professors given an unexpected 2 weeks' notice to leave her room. So just wanted to plug that, get your attention on what's going on over there. There doesn't seem to be the same type of backlash because this is, of course, is, you know, much quieter and much more incremental move by the university, but horrible nevertheless. Let's go to this clip. Oh, incidentally, and we will I'll mention this when we bring James Russell on in a moment, but today is really a how-to. This is one of the, like, news you can use. This is going to come to a shock to a lot of people. We don't have this data as clearly on other platforms that are our audio podcast, and in our audio podcast is a little bit larger, but for at least, you know, almost half of our audience, we have like age data that comes from YouTube. I don't know if that's quite half, but whatever. Let's just call it a significant portion of our audience. Like 75% of our viewers on YouTube, this is going to come to a shock to people, are younger than I am. And now is the time for you to start thinking about your retirement. You don't want to wait until you're my age because you get screwed. And that's why I want, and of course, also, it's an opportunity for me to talk about Social Security. Oh, just an update on Emma. Emma is fine at this point. She was in close contact with somebody who has now been tested and has COVID. So for an abundance of caution, she was boosted. Not everybody in the office is boosted yet. In an abundance of caution, she's going to get one more PCR test today. And that's what she's doing right now. The lines have gotten really big in New York, like literally over the past week. I walked by three or four different testing facilities every day when I go home and when I come to work, at least three or four. And I have not seen lines like this for, I guess maybe it was like the last surge we had in June or July or somewhere around there.
I've seen like lines around like rapid care places this big since I think the start of the pandemic.
Yeah, it is back on. And I can tell you, my daughter texted me this morning. She's like, everybody has COVID at school. Everybody has COVID at her high school. Everybody has COVID at another high school where her friends are.
Even in sports, you can tell there's a lot of games being missed now.
Yep. Be careful, folks. Get a KN95 mask at a minimum. But Emma, assuming all our tests come back negative, will be here tomorrow. So just an update there. So everybody's fine. But I just wanted to, you know, we're in fairly close quarters here. We're all fairly, I don't want to say neurotic, but we're all, you know, cautious about it. And so that's what we do here. Let's play this clip of Sean Hannity reacting to the fact that he was beseeching the president to please do something about this whole, how am I supposed to spin this? I mean, wasn't this all just about fundraising? I don't understand what you're doing, Donald Trump. I thought we were just... It's not a con if you actually send people in there to overturn the election. Then it's a real insurrection. I mean, Now, of course, Sean Hannity's in a tough position here because he wants to maintain his relationship with Trump. So he probably doesn't even want Trump to know that he was begging Mark Meadows to beg Donald Trump to not do what he was doing or to do something to stop this.
And think of what the audience is going to think.
Yeah. So how do you quickly move to the sine qua non principle of being a conservative, which is aggrievement? How is Sean Hannity going to make it about his own personal or ideological aggrievement? Well, it's going to take almost 90 seconds for him to do it. Play this clip.
Attempt to smear yours truly and presumably, I guess, President Trump. Congresswoman Cheney presented one of my text messages from January 6th to Mark Meadows. Surprise.
Sorry. I know people don't like it when I interrupt the video this quickly. But I like how he says this is a smear of me and ostensibly of Donald Trump. I mean, the fact of the matter is that all of the people mentioned, aside from the fact that it's quite clear that these Fox News people are basically just the PR department of the presidency, and they need to know how to spin this, and this presidency was so driven by Fox News media that they've got to go back to despite that dynamic, at the very least, none of these people are cheering it on. This is to indict Donald Trump and make it clear that everyone, despite the fact that what they say now, like it was no big deal, it was just some tourists or it was Antifa, everyone in the moment knew what was going on and knew what was required. And Donald Trump, despite that, didn't do it because he had a different agenda. That's the point of this. But it's got to be start off with, it's a smear of me. I mean, there's a healthy amount of narcissism that has to take place if you're going to do even this type of work. But That's pretty healthy. All right, start it over again.
Attempt to smear yours truly, and presumably, I guess, President Trump. Congresswoman Cheney presented one of my text messages from January 6th to Mark Meadows. Surprise. I said to Mark Meadows the exact same thing I was saying live on the radio at that time and on TV that night on January 6th and well beyond January 6th. And by the way, where is the outrage in the media over my private text messages being released again publicly? Do we believe in privacy in this country? Apparently not. It's not my first rodeo. Like the thousands of Hannity text messages released to the public over the years in FOIA requests, other leaks. I am an honest, straightforward person. I say the same thing in private that I say to all of you. Liz Cheney knows this. She doesn't seem to care. She's interested in one thing and one thing only, smearing Trump and purging him from the party. And now she is partnering with the very same people. Interestingly, it's a great question for her if somebody ever gets a chance to interview her. Why would you partner with the very people that are as an evil, murdering war criminal and a crook on top of it in order to take, what, one last shot at the former president? Now, according to my sources, this is just a few years after Liz and her family begged and begged and begged Donald Trump to pardon Scooter Libby, which Donald Trump did. And in the interest of full disclosure, I'd like to see any communication between the Cheney family, that means Liz, that means her sister, mom, dad, anybody in the family, that they had with President Trump on behalf of Scooter Libby or any other matter. Let's release any and all emails and texts. Liz, let's release your phone records and texts and your family discussing Donald Trump, considering you're so free to release everybody else's. Now, clearly, Liz Cheney has lost her way. She will lose her seat, and then I'm sure probably make a fortune like her father at Halliburton or some other big conglomerate and make millions probably doing next to nothing. And meanwhile, one of Cheney's no-name Democratic colleagues has apparently never watched this program. I will address this. Take a look.
This would be a good time for these hosts to use their platform.
First off, let me say that it's credit where credit's due. I would like to see all of the documents from all of the Cheneys released. Frankly, every document that anybody with the last name Cheney has ever generated that involves our government, I would like to see it released.
Also all the Fox News hosts.
And all the Fox News hosts, for that matter.
No privacy.
Absolutely agree with his characterization of Cheney going off to make a bunch of money and doing nothing at Halliburton and it basically, and daddy being a war criminal. All of that. Totally subscribe to all of that.
Is that what Hannity was talking about in like 2007?
Oddly, that never came up. Also, I would like to examine this quid pro quo involving Scooter Libby getting the pardon. I love the fact that, like, you know, you're complaining about there's no honor amongst thieves.
We did that Scooter thing for you.
We did the transactional thing, and I can't believe it. This is why we did that.
Trump really gives up all his leverage. The Scooter thing, the putting all the justices on the Supreme Court, really doesn't know when to hold on to his cards.
He just said BB didn't even want peace. Now I'm with the Jews against Israel in America. So there's Sean Hannity complaining, of course, that it's not his first rodeo. You know, Sean Hannity, the one who would totally respect private correspondence. I mean, I'm flooded with like just a litany of examples where he wouldn't do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, famously the Hillary stuff.
Hillary stuff, the Biden stuff. I remember when he was really, really criticizing Julian Assange for releasing all of those private emails and all those DNC, nothing to do with our government.
I mean, it seems like he has a closer connection to the administration than Hunter does to Joe.
So. Exactly. But it's not his first rodeo, as he says. Well, let's tune in because, you know, Sean Hannity was sort of doing a disservice to his fellow Fox News hosts because he didn't even mention Laura Ingraham's texts and he didn't mention Brian Kilmeade's texts. Let's check in this morning with Fox and Friends, where Brian Kilmeade is on every single day. See what Brian Kilmeade had to say about this on Fox and Friends. Play a clip of Fox and Friends, please.
Well, today, here on the plaza, it's day three of our 12 days of giving. And this morning, we're highlighting the USO.
That's right, Steve. The nonprofit is helping send a little piece of home to our service members stationed around the world this Christmas.
And today, they are here to show us how they do it all and serve so many of our men and women.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Freeze it. Freeze it. What happened to Brian Kilmeade?
I don't see Brian Kilmeade. He's been replaced.
Oh, it's Kilmeade Wednesday. Who's the new guy that we've never seen? Have we seen this guy before? Who is he, Bradley?
Lawrence Jones? What was he? Was he like they pulled him out of accounting? Lawrence, what are you doing right now? Oh, well, I'm just doing the end of the year financials. Yeah. Hey, any chance you can come downstairs and just go out and talk about the USO?
Yeah, fill in for Brian Kilmeade, aka the easiest job.
Exactly. Oh, I don't know anything about the USO. Don't worry about that. We got cue cards.
You don't know anything? Fine. Perfect.
Yeah. You don't know anything about this whole texting of Mark Meadows, do you? No. Great. Even better.
Kilmeade watch.
Kilmeade watch, day one. We'll see if he shows up. Hey, folks, just a reminder, this program sponsored by SunsetLakeSabaday.com. This is, we just recently finished our fundraising drive with SunsetLakeSabaday.com. We gave over, between the two of us, Majority Report and Sunset Lake, over $20,000. To givedirectly.org. They give money directly to people living in extreme poverty because those people know exactly best how to deploy it. That promo is over, but you can still get 20% off at sunsetlakesabaday.com with the coupon code LEFTISBEST. The Sunset Lakes products, in addition to them being a great business in terms of $15 minimum wage, mostly employee owned company. They practice regenerative farming, take care of the soil, use organic fertilizer. They don't use any pesticide. They use integrated pest management, which is just like a combination of rotating crops and growing other stuff. Their products have an incredible amount of integrity. You can see third-party analysis of it on their website, every product that they sell. They have Sabaday fudge, which is amazing, tasty, and it is relaxing. They have Sabaday coffee. They have gummies that are delicious and hit you pretty quick. They have tincture, which is my go-to to go to sleep every night. They have it in different strengths, 750, 1500, 3000 milligrams. They have tincture with melatonin. They have smokables, kief. Matt grinds it with some other stuff.
Kief is nice.
I take some of those pre-rolls and maybe like on a Friday night after dinner, just to relax, that type of thing. It's quite a sensation, I have to say, because it doesn't give you the sort of mental high, but it gives you like a sort of a physical relaxation. All of their products are fantastic. They have a balm with Arnica that is I use quite a bit for, frankly, my dry skin. Even though they have a lotion, I like the balm with Arnica for that. Check it out, SunsetLakeSabaday.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST, one word, 20% off. Check it out now. Also, if you're looking for a great present that you need to have come quickly for your folks or for your, I mean, really from your kids to you too, or anybody, this is a great one. And I've used this in the past and thank goodness. StoryWorth. StoryWorth is an online service. It helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. Every week, StoryWorth emails your relative or friend or your parent a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of options. Each unique prompt asks questions you never thought to ask, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? I don't know. If you're like me, who never asked anybody, their parents, any questions, this is was a great way to sort of build a record and do it before you do it while you have the opportunity. After 1 year, StoryWorth compiles all of your loved ones' stories, including photos, and they put it into a beautiful keepsake book that you're able to share. You can give it to them. You can make two copies, give it to yourself, give it to your kids. You'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. Reading the weekly stories helps you connect with loved ones no matter how near or far apart you are. It honestly is a, you know, the questions are not, you know, particularly sophisticated. They're straightforward, but they're ones you would never think to ask more often than not. And it jogs people's memories. And just having these memories is a great way Even, you know, to build it for your own kids. It's worth it to give yourself the gift, frankly. With StoryWorth, I'm giving those I love a most thoughtful personal gift from the heart and preserving their memories and stories for years to come. Go to StoryWorth.com/majority. Save $10 on your first purchase. That's StoryWorth.com/majority. Save $10 on your first purchase. Honestly, great, great gift for yourself, for them, for your kids, all of it. Lastly, common scenario, you need to see a doctor. You search, you find one that looks good, you wait on hold to book an appointment, of course, you rearrange your schedule, you finally go in, you find out doctor doesn't even take your insurance. Well, that's all done with now. You just download the free ZocDoc app. It's the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can search for local doctors who take your insurance. You can then read the verified patient reviews of that doctor. Book an appointment. You can do that, obviously, in person or video chat. You will never wait on hold with a receptionist again. You get all this done. It's turnkey. Doesn't matter if you need a primary care physician, a dentist, a dermatologist, a psychiatrist, an eye doctor, knee doctor, elbow doctor. I'm just going through all the things that I've seen in the past like 3 months. ZocDoc has you covered. All sorts of specialists. Go to ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/majority. Download the ZocDoc app. Sign up for free. Every month, millions of people use ZocDoc. Bradley uses it. Emma uses it. I use it to find a specialist for my elbow. I have a friend who did it for therapy even. And no, there's no surprises. You get it's a seamless situation where you set up the appointment and you already know that they take your insurance. ZocDoc makes healthcare easy. Now is the time to prioritize your health. Now really is the time. Good time to do it. Go to ZocDoc.com/majority. Download the ZocDoc app. Sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. Okay, I want to welcome to the program James Russell. He is a public policy affiliate scholar at Portland State University and author of The Labor Guide to Retirement Plans for Union Organizers and Employees. James, welcome to the program. Now, I want to say, like, this topic, first off, longtime listeners of the show know that I am enamored with Social Security. I think it's the best program that we have probably adopted in this country. Certainly beloved by many people. But I wanted to say this to our audience. I was saying earlier that much of our audience is younger than I am. This is going to sound on its face boring, but this is one of the most important shows that we've done for you. If you are in your 20s or your 30s or even your 40s, you need to know this now, because by the time you get to be my age in your 50s, it's almost too late, but hopefully now we'll talk a little bit about this. But James, welcome to the show. Tell us how you ended up, becoming an expert at these pensions, because I think that it's telling and it's important for people to understand that dynamic now when they're younger.
Well, Sam, I thank you very much for the invitation. The way that I got into this was both academically. I studied social policy and retirement plans are a subset of that. But more importantly, I got involved in a whole labor union struggle in Connecticut, where a sizable portion of state employees were at a 401k type plan. And what I was able to do was to get them out of a 401k and into a pension plan, which all of us did much, much better in the pension plan. And in the course of that, I ended up speaking to people all over the place. And I had to learn everything I could about pensions and about 401k plans and the whole retirement system.
All right. Now, I know for a lot of our audience, just the words like 401k and pension plan, they vaguely, like, they've heard these words before, but they don't necessarily know what they are. Can you, let's go through let's talk about what existed prior to, let's say, 1975. We had two types of pension plans in addition to Social Security. So will you walk us through both the history and the sort of taxonomy of these things?
Sure. There was never a golden age of retirement in this country. That is, as of now, about half of people have no retirement plan at all, except for Social Security. Okay, and Social Security, as you point out, is very, very key to all of this. But if you had a retirement plan before 1975, it was most likely a pension plan. There were a few exceptions, but the great majority of people had pension plans. Then
What does that mean, pension plan? Like, I mean, will you tell us the difference between a defined contribution pension plan and a defined benefit pension plan?
Sure. A pension plan guarantees you benefits. Okay, there are different formulas that it does it, but you have a certainty when you retire. A 401k or defined contribution plan has no guarantees whatsoever. You're supposed to just put money into it. It's really a savings account. It's not at all a pension plan. It's a savings account. And you hope that that'll be enough to support you in retirement. And in all the research I've done, pension plans are much, much better than savings plans.
Okay. So to be clear, a defined benefit plan is a pension plan. That means that the benefit you're going to get is locked in. It is defined. It's going to be X number of dollars. A defined contribution plan is not a pension plan because all it does is tell you how much you have to put in it. You may not get that out because all a 401k is, it's basically a tax-free savings account that you can put in and invest in maybe the stock market. Maybe you get more money. Maybe you want to retire in 2009 and you're screwed because all your money was in the stock market in 2008. That's basically the difference, yes?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So where did these 401ks come from? Because in the mid 70s, most people who worked at a big company anyways had a defined benefit or a pension plan. I work at GE and some of my pay is deferred. GE puts it into a some type of an account, and at the end, whether GE handles it properly or not, I know that I'm going to get $2,000 a month or something like that.
Okay, well, 401ks, a version of them have been around from the 1920s, but they were very unusual. They were never, for most people, a main vehicle for retirement income. Then in the late 1970s, 1979 to be precise, several people were doing accounting and they came up with this idea that maybe people could save tax-free for retirement. But that was supposed to be in addition to a pension plan. Okay, it was not supposed to be instead of a pension plan. Okay, then 1981, the Reagan administration Treasury Department makes a ruling that says that it's okay to begin substituting these types of plans for pension plans. And then in the 1980s, all kinds of corporations begin ending their pension plans and giving workers 401ks instead. Now, I think it's really interesting that at the beginning of this, in the beginning of the 1980s, people thought that 401ks would provide much more income than pension plans. Okay. And then they found out 25, 30 years later, when people started to retire under these, that precisely the opposite was what was happening.
All right. So to be clear, we have our three-legged stool. I just wrote it up here. We got Social Security, the pension plan, and your savings, right? I mean, that is what retirement was supposed to look like. 401k starts out as a savings vehicle. And under the Reagan administration, it actually replaces the pension. And so then and the problem is it is a far less generous pension. It's really, okay, there's two things I'm curious about. What is it that Reagan did, like technically speaking, that allowed for that? It was just a change in the IRS code? And then two, the second question I have is, will you explain how the 401k, why it is not as efficient as a defined benefit pension?
Okay. The first question is simply it put out a rule saying that it was okay to do this. I mean, this is a kind of very involved part of the whole federal government and what it does, when it allows certain things to happen. And it was that ruling that opened the door for that switch. Now, the reason why 401ks don't do as, and I should say 401k-like plans, because there are 403bs, there are 457s, there are IRAs, there are all these other things that are basically retirement savings vehicles out there. The reasons they don't do as well, there are multiple, but they fall in two broad categories. The first one is that you take this money and you give it to a financial services firm, okay, that is going to be the custodian of your money. Now, they do this for a price, okay, and it is not a cheap price. Okay, they have all kinds of fees, commissions, they have profit taking, they also have one thing that people may notice is huge advertising expenses because they're competitive, okay, among themselves. I mean, think for a minute, when was the last time you saw an advertisement from Social Security?
Right. There's no overhead. Right. There's a profit motive. Nobody's skimming stuff off this.
Exactly. So that's the first reason. Actually, bigger than that is that the superiority of a pension defined benefit is it involves risk sharing. Okay. So if you, let's say one type of pension, you pay into it all the way to the age of 65, you retire, and you drop dead. Okay, what happens to the money? This is what happens in Social Security, which is a form of defined benefit plan. Okay, the money stays in the plan. You know, worker number two lives to the ripe old age of 105 and continues to get income all the way up to 105. So what happens is that the short-lived subsidize the long-lived. Okay, and that's what provides the absolute certainty and security. And actuaries figure all of this out mathematically. Okay, also, you know, with a lot of pension funds depend upon investments, just like in 401ks. Okay, but if you, like in 2009, you have to retire at that time and the stock market is down. In a pension plan, it doesn't affect you because they can have a longer view of it, know that they're going to make it up in the future. So they're giving you a certain amount. Those are the two main reasons that, you know, broad reasons. There are a lot of other smaller ones that are in there.
Okay. So to make it clear, Social Security is a social insurance program. And so we put this money in. It is matched by our employer and actuarials work out like how much we're going to need. We know that the trust fund is going to last until I think it's 2027 now at least. And then, you know, it's just a matter of we can talk about the sort of tax rates in a bit, maybe. You don't need the trust fund to support at least 75 to 80% of the payouts in Social Security anyways. But we know that it gives you that protection because it's a social insurance. With the 401k, we should be clear here, even if the employees, I mean, when big employees under a defined benefit program, they share the risk because they can't play fast and loose by saying like, oh, if we contribute this amount of money, we're going to anticipate it growing X, Y, Z amount. And if it doesn't grow that amount, it's on them because they're the ones who are supposed to maintain the value of it. With a 401k, there's nobody who is sharing the risk with you. They can say like, oh, you're going to make, you're going to have $500,000 by the time you retire. But if you don't, you just, sorry, There's no insurance involved in this, because we cannot know these things over the course of, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever it is, 30 years, 40 years. But the 401k has become ubiquitous, right? It has almost totally replaced the, pension programs, putting Social Security aside. But in terms of private pensions, it's almost all 401k now.
Yes and no. Okay, like some of the strikes that are being fought are in the private sector now, and they're precisely over preserving pension plans. Okay, so there still are pension plans in the private sector. And for most public sector workers, they have pension plans. It's really the reverse image of that. You know, most of them have pension plans. A smaller amount have 401k type plans.
All right. And fair enough. We're talking, we have, I don't know, what, 7% density, union density, maybe less in the private sector. So the vast majority of what used to be pension plans are now 401k plans. What is important for people to know if I'm 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old? What is important for us to know going into, you know, our going into employment or maybe into entering into a contract, both from a union perspective and not if we're not unionized?
Well, that was a lot of the motive of the book that I wrote, was that when I was involved in the struggle in Connecticut, I ended up talking to all kinds of employees, people who were like heads of economics departments, who were quoted in the New York Times as knowing something. Okay, and they had very little idea how their retirement plan worked. Okay, I think for a lot of people, it's just a subject that is, they think it's incredibly difficult to understand it, and then they trust somebody else to take care of it. I also found that a lot of union activists did not know as much as they needed to know, and that's pretty important because often they are asked by other employees what they should do, and they really don't have, they're not equipped to give the advice. And then it's continual, the attempts to lower the cost of retirement plans by employers. And so union people need to be equipped to fight those fights, and they're all over the place.
Well, all right. So give us that advice. Give us some examples of where we see corporations trying to shrink pensions and sort of hide this. I mean, that's the thing, is it's deferred payment. So it's very hard to sort of have people sort of feel it viscerally, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. It's a kind of silent killer, the way I put it. Like if you are in a 401k plan, we'll start with that example. You're in a 401k plan and your employer decides to reduce the employer match. Okay, your take-home pay is the same. Okay, but you don't realize that 20 or 30 years down the road, this is going to have a pretty significant impact on your financial ability to retire. And with pension plans, what sometimes happens, which is very much involved in these strikes, is that the employer will say, okay, we're going to keep the pension plan for you legacy workers, but for everybody who's new, we're going to put them in a 401k. Okay, this is exactly what happened with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, which last year fought a strike, a very long strike of several months, where, you know, the orchestra did not play any of its regular concerts because they were trying to set up a two-tier retirement system. You know, one set of people have a pretty decent pension plan. The other set are in a 401k. And so those struggles, I mean, there are just multiple different ways that those struggles play out.
I just want to make sure that I do ask you, like, you know, what of these employers who say that it's not, we just can't afford it anymore. But I want to get to that in a moment. But I want you to just, what is a variable pension plan? Just as people, you know, I want to just cover what people may come across out there.
Okay, the variable pension plan there are very few examples of it right now, okay, but it developed in 2014 by some accountants who were trying to kind of keep both sides happy in labor struggle. That is to preserve a defined benefit plan, but at the same time make the contributions of the employer certain for them. Okay, and so they set up this plan, which is really like a cash balance plan. Okay, that is, you put in a certain amount. In this case, you put in a certain amount of time, and then you're guaranteed a certain outcome. So it does have a defined benefit characteristic to it. But compared to a traditional pension plan, it is greatly inferior. Consumer Reports, okay, the, you know, great magazine that a lot of people trust, did exactly that. In 2014, they ended a defined benefit traditional pension for their employees and gave them a variable pension plan. Okay, it was better than putting them into 401k, I'll grant that. Okay, but in looking at the returns of that plan, workers at Consumer Reports lost about half of their retirement security. Yep.
You also write about the applied financialization of retirement plans. What does that mean?
Oh, it's a term that I kind of invented. That is, financialization is a term that's used by a lot of people who analyze what's been happening with the economy, the growing power of financial corporations and financial capital. Okay, and people can get very, very theoretical about it. Okay, and
Feel free to get theoretical. We can bring it back too from there.
Yeah, yeah. But the point that I'm trying to make is that a lot of people don't draw the connection between the financialization in a theoretical way and their own retirement plan. Okay, and that's what's happening is the growing power of these financial corporations that have essentially expropriated the retirement savings of American workers over the last 30 or 40 years. And it's been, I would argue, arguably the largest expropriation of workers' income. Okay. You know, even more than frozen wage rises and so forth is what's happened with retirement savings.
All right. So to be clear, there are two major players who are interested in the 401k, 401k, and all of those type of so-called retirement vehicles. It's the employer, because the employer no longer has to guarantee that their workers are going to get a certain benefit when they retire. They only know that they have to put in a certain amount. And they can change that amount, like you say, they can renegotiate. And then the other big player who are in favor of this are essentially the investment banks and all these entities that will get a slice and a little piece here and there through fees and whatnot. And also, I would imagine, to inflate the stock market, because you're getting this 401k. Much of it is often invested in these vehicles. Like equities and whatnot. Will you talk about, just so that people understand this too, how those forces came to play in 2005, shortly after his reelection? George Bush wanted to privatize parts of Social Security, essentially, and that is what, I mean, that's what the big game was, right? Like, the Wall Street wanted that, what they called that dumb money, because the dumb money is money who nobody's really looking after that much, and they want to take a piece of it.
Yeah, before I address that directly, there's a third player in this, which is very important, which are the conservative think tanks, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, all of which are heavily in favor of getting money out of Social Security and into the Wall Street investments. Okay, they have ideological reasons for doing that. And so they are the ones who are really the cheerleaders of all of these types of changes. So if we go to 2005, George W. Bush had just won re-election. He was going to spend some of that capital, and he was going to partially privatize Social Security. Okay, and this is really a totally fascinating story, because this neoliberal transformation of Social Security is something that had happened throughout Latin America. It started in Chile under a dictatorship, a military dictatorship, with advisors from the University of Chicago, students of Milton Friedman, all this type of neoliberalism. Talk about applied. I mean, that was applied neoliberalism.
Didn't Friedman himself go down and basically consult with Pinochet and essentially said, like, this is how we're going to do this?
Yes. Yes, that's definitely true. Okay. And, you know, I've been to Chile and talked to a lot. And Chileans have huge demonstrations now against that privatized system. Okay. So Bush, you know, tried to do it in the U.S., but the pushback from labor unions, from community groups, from churches, from senior groups was so huge that by August of 2005, he had to abandon it because it was stopping everything else from happening. Now, this is a kind of equal opportunity attack on Social Security because the Obama administration also tried to do things that not to privatize it, but to cut back benefits. Okay. And similarly, there was a large pushback. You can even go back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because I spent a lot of time talking about Simpson Bowles. We called them the Cat Food Commission. And there was, you know, Simpson was a Republican senator from Wyoming or retired at that point. Erskine Bowles was a Democratic chief of staff, if I recall correctly, for I think Jimmy Carter was it, or and he was also a privatizer. He wanted to privatize Social Security. So this was Obama's fair, even-handed commission. And if I remember correctly, the commission was of 12 people. They were supposed to have 10 people sign off on a report to make it valid. They could not because there was so much pressure against the idea of cutting Social Security benefits that the commission itself never released a report. Only Simpson and Bowles actually wrote it. And the media reported it much of the as if it was the report, but it wasn't the report. It was just these two guys, and they didn't even allow their commission because their commission could not agree on the idea of cutting Social Security. People forget this history of the Obama administration.
Well, it was not only to cut Social Security, it was to reconfigure how the benefit would be determined and to move it more toward a welfare program to benefit the poor and remove it from middle class beneficiaries of it, which is very much in line with previous World Bank recommendations, okay, that you needed to have some sort of a guaranteed program for the poor, okay, but for everybody else, they should just save and invest. And so this would have moved that. Now, if you do that, then that's really just down the road to ending Social Security because it's often said in Washington that the poor have poor representation. You know, they're not able to fight for it. Whereas one of the reasons why the regressive moves against Social Security have been stopped in their tracks is that you have a lot of middle-class people who benefit from it. Okay, and so they get very upset when they hear that somebody might take away their benefits.
Okay, so let's get to just some very practical information. I mean, you're talking to a 20-year-old or 20-something-year-old or 30-year-old or 40-year-old. I mean, what is it that you would tell them if they were in a situation where, I mean, obviously you wrote this book specifically for with the idea that union fights are going to continue to happen, and you know what unionized folks do. But is there anything, if you're not in a unionized workplace, is there anything you can do aside from like support Social Security and understand the value of it and not buy the hype that it's going bankrupt, et cetera, any more than the Defense Department is going bankrupt in 10 years? What would you advise people?
Well, you know, in terms of personal advice, you know, you might consider finding a job with a good retirement plan. Okay, I mean, that's always something to think about. Okay, and all the things you said about, you know, protecting Social Security. Okay, if you're in a pension plan, you need to know all about it. So that you can not just defend it, but maybe argue for ways to make it better. Every pension plan can be improved, and it doesn't necessarily require any more money on the part of anybody. It's just a reorganization of various parts of it that make it more flexible for individuals that are in it. I think in terms of ultimate solutions, is it's a lot like Medicare for all. We kind of need high Social Security for all in this country. If you look around the world at those countries that have the most favorable retirement plans, almost all of them have unitary systems. Okay, they don't have this three-legged stool stuff. Okay, they have one big national Social Security system, okay, and they put more money into it, and people get more money out of it. I think ultimately that's the solution in the United States, is to phase out employer plans and shift all that money into Social Security, make Social Security provide much more income than it provides now. Now, I mean, that's kind of pie in the sky right now. Okay, but it's not a technical problem. It's a political problem. Okay. And I think there are a number of intermediary steps that can be taken to, like, one that I would like, okay, if you'll bear with me,
please,
is that when people think about 401ks, they think about how much money they're putting into it. They less often think about what they're supposed to do when they actually retire with that money. Okay. And when you retire, you can keep on investing, okay, and then keep drawing money out. Okay, it's usually less than 4%. So you can do the calculation in your head and look at how much accumulation you have, multiply it by 4%. If you have $100,000, that means you're going to get $4,000 a year. Okay, not a lot. Okay, and the average that people have who are approaching retirement is about $120,000. So people are not getting a whole lot of money from this. Okay, so one of the reasons they're not getting a lot of money from it is that when you retire, you really don't have any good options for what to do with this money. Okay, either you'll continue to invest it and draw it down. Okay, or who wants to do that in their 90s if you're lucky enough to live in your 90s? Okay. Or you can buy a product called an annuity, which a life insurance plan sells you. Okay. They'll take your $100,000, and in return, they'll promise you a little bit higher rate. Okay. And they'll promise it for the rest of your life, okay, which gives you certainty, okay, which, you know, the whole investing stuff doesn't. Okay. But they take their huge profits, their commissions, all of that out of it. What I would like to see is Social Security start issuing annuities. They would be a much better deal. okay, that people could take their 401k savings, roll them into Social Security in return for a larger Social Security check, and they'd be much better. That's an intermediary reform that is doable, okay, but of course the life insurance companies would scream bloody murder about it.
Right, because they're selling that product now, but of course they're taking their slice of it. Whereas if Social Security provided that product, there's no profit. It's just the administrative costs.
Right, exactly. Right. And, you know, Social Security has a good reputation. I mean, I'm sure people.
Is there anybody in, I mean, after Obama failed in his attempt to make a deal with the Republicans to raise the cost of, to cut the cost of living increases in Social Security. That was the deal that he was trying to make with them. And fortunately, the Republicans were incapable of taking yes for an answer when it came. The Senate, it was more of a symbolic resolution, I guess. But it put down a marker, voted to increase Social Security benefits. Is there anybody out there who, presumably Democratic, senators, who have promoted, offered, written a bill that would provide those type of annuities via Social Security?
No. I mean, I wish I could say yes. I mean, the struggle that's going on in the Congress over Social Security now is mainly over its financing, okay, to make sure that when 2032 rolls around, that they don't just by doing nothing, you know, force a 20% cut in benefits. There are some attempts to put some other features into Social Security. To use it maybe partially for caregivers. You know, right now, if you know, let's say you have a spouse who has a stroke and you have to drop out of work to take care of them, you lose your time in Social Security and you lose your benefit. Okay, so there are people who are working on that reform to Social Security. Social Security has had wonderful reforms over the years. You know, the cost of living adjustment that became automatic under Nixon, by the way, okay, under a Republican, the adding of disability income to it, the making of spouses, you know, eligible to collect what their other spouse collected. You know, there are all kinds of very favorable reforms, and there's room for a number more.
Well, James Russell, the book is The Labor Guide to Retirement Plans for Union Organizers and Employees. And I would say it is important for everybody to read up on this stuff and understand it, because if not today, then tomorrow you might find yourself in a situation where you have to make these type of decisions, both for yourself personally, but also for you and your fellow workers in the context of a negotiation. And very important to understand this stuff, because it and understand it early, because when you're in your 50s, it's a little bit late to deal with these things, sadly. James, thanks so much for your time today. We'll put a link to that at majority.fm.
Thanks a lot, Sam. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Get on it. That's my little holiday gift to you. Little words of wisdom. So we don't have a pension plan here. Majority Report. We're going to have to do something about that.
Sounds great.
I should really look into that. I wonder if there's like a third party like we could subscribe to or something.
Should ask James.
Well, we still have access to his info. Folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe. Subscribe to the channel. We got a bunch of subscribers yesterday. We covered Crackergate. A bunch of new subscribers. Welcome. All the Cracker Gators. And what will happen is, I spoke to Kyle yesterday. We're working on a bunch of new features, too, also for members of the show, that are going to be basically, you know, based in our app. The app's always going to be free, but you're going to get extra benefits if you're a member. I'm quite convinced in 6 months and a year from now, I'm going to get an IM from somebody, or I'm going to get a phone call. I've been a member since Crackergate. Or I started listening at Crackergate. Oh, speaking of Crackergate, we are now almost 1 month away, almost to the day of what we call the Big Lie Show. January 16th in Boston, Massachusetts. We are doing a live show at 3 p.m. at the Wilbur Theater in Boston. Joining us, H. John Benjamin of was on that show, Archer, Bob's Burgers, was in that movie, Who's the Caboose? And Larry Murphy, also of Bob's Burgers, and the late Assy McGee. Natalie Scherr, writer for New Republic, will be joining us. May add another guest or two. We'll see. But we will all be there. Matt, Bradley, Emma. We will all be up there in Boston. You can join us.
I've decided I'm wearing a Boston Celtics hat.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because I can't wear a Red Sox hat in New York. That feels like dickish, like an inviting confrontation. And Patriots make me feel a little bit like a Republican, so I'm going to wear the Celtics.
That's not appropriate. That wasn't appropriate to say. That was inappropriate.
Maybe I'll get the old throwback hat with the like Patriot hiking the ball through his legs.
That's a much better hat, and they're available. I have one or two of those, but that was not cool.
No,
what about Bruins, dude?
I'd feel false wearing a hockey hat because
right,
I just don't
you
know the sport.
Yeah. Right. Folks, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I should tell you that Friday will be my last live day of the year. We are putting together the best ofs, which are going to start a week from Friday. Emmett's going to be hosting next week. I'm going to take the first 2 week contiguous vacation that I have taken in at least 11 years. It's possible during the Air America days that I had time. There was also a time like I was sort of fired for like a month or something, like somewhere around like, but that was more anxiety inducing than it was relaxing. But
yeah, not having employment for a year did not feel like a vacation to me.
No. But with like this, the exhaustion from COVID, there's been a tough couple of years. But also I'm getting old. It's time for me to have like one of those European style vacations where you get, you know, 10 contiguous business days off. I'm not going to do anything. It's really, I spend the first 5 days trying to avoid hopping back on the stream or on Twitter. But then I'll have 5 days where I'm actually away from that. So I'm pretty excited. Matt, in the meantime, what's happening in the Matt Lekien media universe? Today's Wednesday.
Yeah, tonight at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, Liza Featherstone coming on to talk about her piece on the crisis of masculinity we're all dealing with right now, particularly on the... I mean, it's everywhere. Also, we're going to be talking about the tornado factories and stuff like that. Also, Starbucks retaliation against workers unionizing, and probably get into the January 6th text a little bit ourselves. So that's tonight, 8, 7 Central, patreon.com/leftreckoning to get the post game, where a few of those things might be in the post game.
Somebody just IM'd and said, You could get a Worcester Shocks hat, but of course they haven't been around since 2015, I think.
Throwback. That'd be cool.
Yep. All right, folks. See you in the fun half. 646-257-3920.
Is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2. 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands
up. Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.